good morning and Chodesh Tov to everybody. Gemara in Bracho says, Poschen Bechod Achzanya, that whenever you have an opportunity to teach Torah, there's no more appropriate place to start than by thanking one's host. So, of course, the Kila Kedosha of Avas Achim, or Ahavat Achim, if you prefer. I noticed that there was a nice and healthy balance down there this morning. So, Avas Achim or Avat Achim. And, of course, the Marda Asra, Rabbi Stephen Miodownik. Thank you so much for welcoming me into your beautiful community. In addition to that, I have a broader sense of hospitality in the Highland Park community, and not just in this particular shul, and really a very profound sense of hakaras hatov, of gratitude to this entire community. I've had the true privilege of learning together with some of the finest sons of this community, many of whom I represented this morning, but at the risk of an omission, I won't say any names, but simply to express my gratitude. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos certainly comes to mind. The Mishnah in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos says, Arba midos beholchei beis hamedrash, that there are four basic categories of those who come to study Torah. One of them is a holech ve'eno osa, somebody who makes a great effort to get to the Beit Midrash, but once he or she, for that matter, is there, there's not that much output, there's not that much yield. Then there's the alternative, the opposite scenario, Osev Eino Holech, somebody that doesn't have to go very far, but they get to the Beit Midrash and they do quite a bit of work. And then you have the two extremes, Holech Va'osa, a person who has to expend a great energy to get there. And then while they're there, certainly the output is there, as the Mishnah says, such a person is a chassid. And then the Mishnah says, Eino Holech Va'eino Osa, a person who doesn't go at all to the Beit Midrash and doesn't even learn where they are, that person is not somebody that we'd admire. That person is a Rasha. So all the Talmidim from Highland Park, we start out with the idea that they are certainly holech, right? At minimum, they have the Schar Halicha every morning to come up to the yeshiva where we're privileged to learn together, that I represent this morning, Torah Academy of Bergen County. But it really doesn't end with the Schar Halicha because, and without any exaggeration, Rubam Kekulam, the product of the Highland Park community is not just Schar Halicha Biado. It's not only that they have the great credit of making the trip that I made in reverse this morning as an expression of that debt of gratitude, but they are in every sense of the term Holchim Ve'osim, that they come and they, I don't need to tell you because you know they're sons of the community, they represent the community in its at its very finest. So it's with a very profound sense of gratitude to this extraordinary community for producing such fine young men who are really credits to the broader community, that I'd like to open with this morning. Of course, we said Halal for Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Chanukah is certainly very much on our minds this morning. And one of the great themes of Chanukah is, of course, comes from the word of Chanukah itself, Chinuch, that of education. And I thought, given the timing of Rosh Chodesh Kislev, and of course representing a yeshiva, I thought it would be an appropriate time to direct my remarks to the concept and certain foundational principles of chinuch. We use that word as kind of a broad, all-encompassing term as far as Jewish education is concerned, but I simply wanted to drill down this morning and to try to pin down certain core elements of the way that our rabbis, our sages understood the essence of the term chinuch, to derive some of the etymology of the term, and hopefully to walk away with, I think, some critical lessons that are translatable and certainly bear general importance in terms of our understanding of what it means to transmit the Masora to the next generation, something that people in this community, of course, do so well. So just in the interest of time, we'll conclude it about a quarter to the hour. You just take a look with me, not at the first source, but at the second source. This is the very end of the Gemara Masachah Shabbos' presentation of the holiday of Chanukah. It's in the second parak of Masachah Shabbos that deals with candle lighting for Shabbos. So, inter alia, the Gemara introduces the concept of lighting candles for Chanukah, and Rav Huna has a remarkable statement. Here you have in the second source, Amar Rav Huna Haragil Bener, as somebody who is not just habituated, but there's an implication of conscientiousness and care, somebody who's very careful about the ner. There's a dispute amongst the Rishonim whether it's talking about just Ner Chanukah or in addition Ner Shabbos based on the context, but certainly at the bare minimum, Ner Chanukah, somebody who's very careful and assiduous in performance of this mitzvah, Havyun Leibonim Talmidei Chachamim, such a person will be rewarded with children who are Torah scholars. And it's a little bit difficult to understand. Rashi quotes the pasuk of Kiner Mitzvah V'Torah Or, a candle in general represents the flame of Torah. But even so, one has to wonder a little bit the connection between the Hanukkah candles and the mitzvah of Torah study, but one doesn't have to look any further than the Rambam in his introduction to Hilchos Megillah v'Chanukah, Paragimel, Halacha Aleph. The Rambam tells us that the oppression that the Jewish people suffered, which was multifaceted, it impacted their finances, it impacted their families, but the Rambam says, more than anything else, it impacted their capacity to study Torah. Shemalchu Yavan v'Yisheni, Gazru Gzeiros al Yisrael b'Tludasam, they made decrees against the Jewish people, nullified the religion, v'lo hinuchu osam lasok b'Torah v'mitzvos. And of course, if that indeed was the malady, if that was the oppression that the Jewish people were suffering from, then it is certainly appropriate that our response to that, the Neros Chanukah, really represent, as Rashi quoted, ki ner mitzvah v'Torah or. So the idea of Neros Chanukah being a kind of a beautiful silent testament to the transmission of our Masorah, I think, is very deeply ingrained within our tradition. And thus the Gemara that I just began with comes into very clear focus. Haragil b'ner, somebody who really appreciates the message of Ner Chanukah, that we were able to defeat our oppressors who wanted nothing more than to see our Masorah not transmitted to the next generation. So somebody who's very careful about the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, which represents the eternity of the Masorah, Havin le'banim tamidei chachamim, such a person will be rewarded with children who have fully internalized the message. Children very much like the ones that I'm privileged to learn with, young men, from this wonderful community. When we talk about chinuch, we're really about talking about something that there's both an art and a science. To begin with, what I might call the science, we do find represented in classical sources the idea that chinuch, the obligation, let's say, we'll use the term for now, but then we'll refine and make our terms that much more precise, that chinuch essentially relates to training young people who are not formally obligated, for a male the age of 13, for a young lady, the age of 12, they're not formally obligated to mitzvah, certainly not on the Torah level, but there's a kind of a rabbinic obligation to help habituate or to train these young people in mitzvah. So perhaps the most famous source that we have within all of our tradition is a Mishnah from Maseches Yoma, the eighth and final chapter, the fourth Mishnah. That chapter, you have it here represented in the third source. Hatinokos in ma'ananosan biyoma kipurim. Of course, children are not obligated to fast on Yom Kippur, but a year or 2 years, depending on their health, that's also important, that it has to be differentiated. We can't say dispositive 1 year for every child or 2 years for every child. Or some children will be a year before Bar Bat Mitzvah, some children it could be 2 years before Bat Mitzvah. Bishvil sheyu regilin b'mitzvah, so that they'll be habituated in terms of the performance of mitzvah. So again, here, the way that the Mishnah sort of defines the term chinuch is that you don't want to have a child all of a sudden at the age of 12 or 13 and, you know, Torah is just piled on them and they don't know what hit them and they can't orient themselves, but slowly but surely, regilin osam, we want to habituate them, and that is very much a theme that I'd like to return to in just a matter of moments. So again, that's a halachic requirement. You might call it the science of chinuch. It's a halachic requirement that inheres to Yom Kippur, in particular to the fast of Yom Kippur, which we know, of course, to be one of the most central and elemental mitzvos of the entire corpus of Torah and mitzvos. To give another example where there was training for a particular mitzvah, at the very beginning of Parshas Vayera, we find that Avram is all too busy scurrying around, I use that word deliberately, really running around from place to place to make sure to welcome the people that he thinks are people, but we know that they're really more than people. They have an angelic quality to them, but be that as it may, Avram thought that these were guests, and you know, despite his own infirmity in the wake of his circumcision, Avram, again, is running about with enormous and quantifiable alacrity in administration of the mitzvah of hachnasas orchim, of welcoming guests. So let's just read the psukim together and make a note of a Rashi, where Rashi makes a very careful observation about the psukim. Vayirai lav Hashem b'ilonei Mamre, God was communing with Avram in the plains of Mamre, v'hu yoshev petach ha'ol kechom hayom. Avram was at the very entrance of the tent at the hottest point of the day. Vayisayna vayar, and he lifts up his eyes and he sees any time vayisayna vayar. It's kind of an inspired look. We have it by the Akedah, Vayisayinav, Vayar Vinei Ayel Achar Nechaz Basvach V'Charnav. It really is one of those terms that defines Avram Avinu. It speaks more than to just physical capacity to see, but it really speaks to what the term we would use in English is, not so much sight, but vision. Vayisayinav Vayar, he had the vision, he had the insight to recognize there could be guests coming. And so he runs. Avram runs, again, despite his infirmity. You know, the rabbinic literature says, you know, his bandages are flying off. You know, it's a scene of medical hazard. But Avram cannot move quick enough to perform this mitzvah. Vayishtachu arza, and he prostrates himself to the ground. Vayomar, and he says to these travelers, Adonai imna matzasi chen beinecha, al na tavor me'al abdecha. Don't deprive me of the opportunity to perform the mitzvah of Achnasas Orchem. Yukach nam ad mayim, a little bit of water. V'rachatzu ragleichem. I'll give you, you know, again, the, you know, the ancient Near East equivalent of a good shower, right? I'll make sure that you're cleaned off. V'hishanu tachara eitz, and you'll be able to rest here in the shade of the tree. And then I'll bring a little bit of food. You know, Avram makes it seem like he'll bring a little bit of a snack, and all of a sudden there's a three-course meal. We know Avram Avinu, and we wouldn't put it past him. Says, I'll just bring you a little bit of bread, and you can have something to eat, and then you'll be able to move on. And they say, okay, no, thank you very much if you're making the offer, so then we're going to accept. Kain tasek hasher dibarta, as you say, you should do. Vayimaher Avraham. And Avram, again, with speed, this is, you know, Vayarut Sikratami Petach, oh, continued. So he goes, Vayimaher Avraham ha'ohela el Sarah, and he goes into the tent. Vayomer, and he says to Sarah, Mahari, quickly, quickly, they're waiting. Shloshim kemach solet lushi vasu goat. Right, he only offered them bread. Now all of a sudden, you know, they've, you know, gone to the kind of cakes that we can have here this morning. He says, let's make the cakes. Ve'ela bakar ratz Avraham. That's now the third instance of Avram running. So he goes and he runs over to the cattle and he doesn't hesitate, even though, of course, very expensive. Vayikach ben bakar rach vatov. He takes essentially the best one that he can find. Vayitein el hanar. And he gives it to the nar. That's the point we're going to key in on. Vayimaher La'asot oto, and the Na'ar does it very quickly. It's a very fascinating thing. Rashi observed that when Avram was communicating with his wife Sarah, he said, Mahari, let's do this quickly. He gave it to his Na'ar. Rashi, take a look at the next source, says, Ze Yishmael, okay? So he gives it to Yishmael, and he doesn't even have to say anything. He doesn't give him any instructions whatsoever. Vayitain el hana'ar, vayimaher la'asot oto. So Yishmael just does it. And he doesn't just do it, but vayimaher, he does it in exactly the style that he observed his father, Avram, doing it all these years. So Rashi picks up on it and he says, Ze Yishmael l'chancho b'mitzvos. To be mechanechem, again, the Mishnah in Maseches Yuma said the language of ragil, that he should be used to doing the mitzvos, but here we sense there may be something a little bit more. It's not just incorporating or involving his son Yishmael in the mitzvah of Achnasas Orchim, but we're moving a little bit from what I call the science to the art. It wasn't just, okay, Achnasas Orchim, we have to take care of the guests, but it's interesting to note that Yishmael did it in precisely the same style, in the same fashion that Avram. Avram didn't need to say anything. Avram was running around himself. He was doing it with what we call Zrizus, and Yishmael simply imbibed that growing up in that house. And Ze Yishmael l'chancho b'mitzvos, to continue to incorporate and integrate Yishmael into the performance of this mitzvah, not just the technical performance of the mitzvah in terms of Achnasas Orchem, but the style with which it was done. And the Rav, Rabbi Soloveitchik, in his really landmark essay denoting what he called the dual masorah, the special role that both men and women play in terms of transmitting the masorah, it certainly doesn't only belong to the father, as the pasuk in Mishlei says, Shma b'ni Musar Avicha ve'al titosh Torah simecha. There's a dual masorah, as Rabbi Soloveitchik spoke about. So now he's going to talk a little bit about his mother, and that his mother's chinuch was very much directed towards this idea, the art of the way that mitzvos are done. Most of all, I learned, he's speaking about what he learned from his mother, that Judaism expresses itself not only in formal compliance with the law, that is to say, not only the science of, you know, how is a mitzvah performed, but also in a living experience, a certain chavaya datit, we would say, a religious living experience. She taught me that there is a flavor, a scent, and a warmth to mitzvot. I learned from her the most important thing in life, to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of His hand resting upon my frail shoulders. Without her teachings, which quite often were transmitted to me in silence, and note the parallel to Avram and Yishmael. He didn't tell him to do anything. He just gave him the cow and Yishmael knew what to do. I would have grown up a soulless being, dry and insensitive. That is to say, he recognized that his mother transmitted to him a profound sense of what it meant to be involved in mitzvos. Again, not the technical details, which he mentions he learned very well from his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, but a sense of what the religious experience is really all about. So when we talk about chinuch, what our aspirations are, is certainly to communicate the details of mitzvot and how mitzvot should be done, but in a broader sense, we want to communicate a sense that each and every mitzvah is kind of a data point in a much broader constellation of a religious experience. And so it's our deepest aspiration and our every hope that we're successful in transmitting to the next generation, again, not just the science of mitzvot, which itself is very important, that's the sine qua non, it all starts there, but on that foundation of the science of mitzvot, to convey a sense that there is a religious experience. The sum of Taryag mitzvot is really greater than the parts. It's not just 613 data points, but there's a kind of a mosaic that emerges from the overall picture of mitzvot. Now, what we'd like to do now is to key in on one, I think, critical aspect of chinuch. I called it here two modes of patience. At reflection this morning, I really could have called it three. That perhaps would have been more precise. But I just wanted to introduce this next section with a brief personal story. When my wife and I first became parents, I went to somebody as our a joint emissary. This is sort of out of character for us, but at this critical, transformative moment in our lives, becoming parents, so I felt it was appropriate to go seek out some sagacious counsel, somebody that we really look up to, particularly Rosh Yeshiva. And I kind of put him on the spot. You know, there's a story in Masechah Shabbos on Daf Lamed Aleph where the putative or prospective convert comes to Hillel HaZaken and he says, "Gireni al menashe tlamdeni kol haTorah kula al regel achas, convert me, teach me the entire Torah on one foot." And Hillel, was up to the challenge, and he famously said, "Alachsani lechavrich lo sa'aved," that which is displeasing to you, you shouldn't do it to your neighbors. Ei kol haTorah kula. That's really the essence of the Torah. V'idach perusha hi zil gemur. The rest is a commentary, and you have to go study it. So this was kind of me, like being this putative convert, and I was putting this particular Rosh Hashiva on the spot, and I basically said, "Can you teach me the whole Torah of parenting, al regel achas?" If you could distill it, I literally said this to him, "If you could distill, what's the most important thing?" And he thought for a moment, he deliberated for a moment, and he said one word, patience. And he paused again, and he said, "You can't be a good parent if you don't have patience." And of course, the same thing applies. We know that parenting and teaching are really two sides of the same coin. All of the psukim that we have in the Torah that tell us that we have to teach Torah are all formulated in terms of a familial obligation. But of course, rabbinically, we understand that banim elu talmidim, that it's not just one's biological children, but one's spiritual children as well, and it's with such a profound sense of partnership with the parents and the grandparents in this room that I'm able to mention these sources. So what I really wanted to focus in on is how patience plays an enormous. There is no way that I could overstate the significance of patience. Each and every day, I'm grateful to that particular Rosh Yeshiva for giving me that piece of advice. And patience is very important. My children are very young, and patience, I would say, is like even more important at that stage. Each and every day, with each passing day, again, I really realize the wisdom of that particular advice that he was able to give me, despite the fact that I put him on the spot. And I'd like to try to elaborate on this through some classical sources. So the Malbim on a Pasuk in Mishlei that we'll turn to in a second, it's probably the classical Pasuk in Mishlei, the word is chanoch. Chanoch lanar al pi darko. We'll come back to the full meaning of the Pasuk. But the Malbim says, what is chanoch? So just like the Mishnah said in Maseches Yoma, when it says regilin osam, to habituate them, the Malbim just adds in two words that I thought were very interesting. The Malbim says chanoch, margilo, to habituate a young man or a young woman before they become bar or bat mitzvah, margilo. And then the Malbim says, me'at, me'at, slowly, slowly. The whole process has to be done systematically and patiently. Okay, let me try to make an argument about where exactly that comes from. So you skip down with me for a second just to source 11. The Pasuk in Hazinu, and it's all poetic in Hazinu, but makes Hazinu a little bit challenging to understand, says, Kinesher Ya'ir Kino, the way that an eagle wakes up the offspring in its nest, Al Gozalav Yirachef, goes lav are the chicks, yirachif. The eagle is hovering there. Okay, I've actually never witnessed an eagle come to the nest. I guess I could look it up on YouTube now. You can get videos of everything. Type in eagle hovering over the nest and you'll get, you know, 42 million responses. I'll actually do that when I get home. I'd like to see it. Kinesher ya'ir kino algo zalav yirachif. Yifros kinafav. He'll spread out his wings. Yikachayu will take them. Yisoehu al evrato. And he'll take his chicks, again, not beneath his wings the way that other birds do, but on top of the wings. So Rashi explains, again, we're not going to read it inside, just in the interest of time, that this is actually a mashal. It's a parable to the way that Hashem approached the Jewish people at Har Sinai. You know, the Torah is so overwhelming. There are 613 Torah-level commandments. There are thousands and tens of thousands of rabbinic expansions of that. That's even before we get to the realm of Minhagim. You know, it's really hard. So the way that Hashem approached the Jewish people at Har Sinai was gently, gently, Kinesher Ya'ir Kino, Algo's Lav Yirachef. If an eagle flies into his nest at 80 miles an hour, the children are going to be destroyed. They're going to be crushed by the velocity of this most powerful and majestic bird coming in at 80 miles an hour, which they can fly at. So an eagle knows that if I'm going to approach the youngsters, I have to do it, you know what? A healthy speed, so the eagle slows itself down. Kinesher Ya'ir Kino Algo Zalav Yirachef. So the idea is that Hashem, when he approached the Jewish people, he didn't come and, you know, overwhelm us, but slowly but surely integrated us into the process of Torah Mitzvah. I think that's exactly what the Malbim had in mind here. Margilo Ma'at Ma'at, that we learn this in terms of the way that we're supposed to teach our children and our students, is that there has to be a systematic nature to the process. We can't overwhelm them. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos certainly comes to mind. Ben Chamei Shanim LeMikra, 5 years, you're teaching them Tanakh. And Ben Esther LeMishnah, then we move on to Mishnah. Ben Chamesh Esrei LeTalmud, and then move on to Gemara. But there's a certain progression here, and we want to make sure that the process itself is not overwhelming. I think that's one level of patience that we have to have when we talk about the successful education. There's a second dimension of patience, which here is represented, I think, almost paradigmatically in the persona of Rabbi Akiva. We all know the story of Rabbi Akiva that he became very interested in growth in Torah at the age of 40, somewhat older than our students are at TABC, at least the vast majority of them. So, but what's not always widely understood is who was Rabbi Akiva before he turned 40. And it's interesting, the Gemara Masechet Ksuvos says that Rachel, who was the daughter of this very wealthy magnate, you could say, a magnate of Jerusalem by the name of Kalba Savua, Ben Kalba Savua. So it says that she saw in him certain potential, that he was Ma'ali Utsnui, which basically means he had good midos, he had a refined character. And Tosfos, on that line in the Gemara, they challenge that. You know, it's a little bit funny that she said he had such a refined character, because there is one statement we have about from Rabbi Akiva reflecting on the years prior to when he was 40, in other words, these years before he became motivated in Torah study. Was it that he never met a Talmud Chacham? Was it that he had no exposure whatsoever? So the Gemara actually says something that I think you'll find quite shocking. So the Gemara Masachas Pesachim Daf Mem Tes says, Amar Rabbi Akiva, Kishe Hayisi Am Haaretz. In other words, before I became a Torah scholar, before the age of 40, Amarti, this is the 10th source, Mi Tainli Talmud Chacham, who will give me a Talmud Chacham? And it's, I knew Talmidei Chachamim, and I wanted nothing more than to v'anashchenu kachamor. I would have, I'm not making this up, bitten him like a donkey. So amrlo talmidav, to bite him is one thing. To bite him like a donkey, what exactly does that mean? So Rebbe, emor kekelev, at the very least you could say I would have bitten him like a dog bites. Why like a donkey? Amar lahem, no. I chose my words very carefully. I meant like a donkey, not like a dog. Amar lahem, zenosheich v'shoveretzem, zenosheich v'enoshoveretzem. See, when a dog bites, it doesn't break through the bone. It just breaks through the flesh. I would have wanted to break their bones. I would have wanted to bite them like donkeys. Wow. Donkey's bite is a very ferocious bite. So it wasn't just that Rabbi Akiva, had no exposure whatsoever, but on the contrary, he had a very negative impression, and that's putting it mildly, of the Talmidei Chachamim that he knew. So the Balei Tosfos are wondering, how could it be that she saw in him all these fine characteristics, and he's busy testifying about himself, that if you introduced him to Talmud Chacham, the Talmud Chacham would have to, go see an orthopedic surgeon a few minutes later. So how is that possible? So the Balei Tosfos say, no, it actually is one and the same, because Rabbi Akiva was a very modest person, And unfortunately, he perceived that some of the Torah scholars around him were arrogant, and they conducted themselves with a certain degree of hubris or self-satisfaction. This bothered him very much. He didn't know why anybody should carry himself that way. And that was very upsetting to him. So be that as it may, I think this source really reflects the idea that for whatever reason, you know, each person really is his or her own world. Everybody has a kind of an internal spiritual clock. At some point, Rabbi Akiva became open to the possibility that maybe those individuals who he met who did not reflect Torah in its finest in terms of their personal comportment, in terms of the way that they carry themselves, and certainly their interpersonal interactions, Rabbi Akiva at some point became open to the possibility that Torah might be more refined and more dignified than, unfortunately, some of its emissaries and some of its ambassadors would have made it out to be. So we have to be patient with people. We don't know when a person is going to have the Rabbi Akiva moment. It could be at 15, it could be at 20, could be at 40 like Rabbi Akiva, could be even later. That's the truth. And so there's a second mode of patience, which is really, I say, vital in the transmission of the Masorah. Think about if somebody had given up on Rabbi Akiva. When Rabbi Akiva finally becomes motivated to study Torah, he becomes affiliated with the two great Gedolim of that generation, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus and Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah, and they're open to teaching him. They didn't say, well, you didn't get it up until now, so you know we've got better, younger, more talented people to invest our time in. Why should we waste our time with you? But again, they accepted that it took however long it took, and that's another modality of patience that I think is absolutely critical. So that's, again, mode of patience number two. Number one, to review, Kinesher Yair Kinoa Gozolav Yirachev, the idea that the eagle doesn't swoop in at 80 miles an hour, and that we can't overwhelm our children and our Talmidim, with all of Torah. It has to be, as the Malbim says, Margilo Ma'at Ma'at, level of patience number one. Then there's a different kind of patience when it comes to dealing with the fact that psychologically and emotionally, people have various considerations. Sometimes they're able to articulate them. Most often, they'll probably keep them to themselves. And so if it's not catching on right away, you don't have to panic. You have to continue to make efforts and to understand that everybody has their own biological clock and everybody has their own spiritual clock. And thank God that Rabbi Akiva's ticked when it did. And of course, we're all the beneficiaries of that today. There's a third and final mode of patience that I wanted to reflect on that I think is certainly best formulated in the Gemara in Maseches Erevin, Daf Nun Daled. You have it here in the 13th source. And it tells a story of a man named Rabbi Freida, who was, the Rebbe par excellence. They didn't have the vocabulary regarding learning disabilities and other kinds of learning challenges that, thank God, we have today to allow us to reach all different kinds of students. But undoubtedly, based on the telling of this Gemara, Rabbi Freida had a student with a particular kind of a learning disability. And the Gemara says, perhaps with some degree of exaggeration, but not much, that this child needed the lesson repeated no fewer than 400 times. And Rabbi Freida, every single day, would simply have the patience to review the lesson with the child 400 times. Let's say it was only 40 times. That would still be incredible, right? So till this particular child was able to integrate the message. And so the Gemara tells the story here. And again, when you have time, more than welcome to keep the sources and to look at the Gemara inside. The Gemara tells the story is that, one day where they're going through their routine and they're, up to, review number 103, and they've got a mere 297 left to go. And somebody walked into the room. He comes around. He looks around for a little bit, doesn't find what he's looking for, and he walks out. So, 7 hours later, or however long it took, they're up to the 400th review, and Rabbi Freida sees that the child didn't get it today. And he says, Mayomi Yomayim, what makes today different than every other day? And the student tells him, he says, look, remember when that guy came in and he started looking around the room? He says, since then, I haven't been able to refocus. I've been asking myself, what was he looking for? He came for his jacket. Now he's going to be cold. He's going to be outside. Did he go to get a new jacket? What color jacket? I wonder what he's going to wear next season. He had all these thoughts, Gemara says. So instead of Rabbi Freida, going berserk, as probably many of us would, so Rabbi Freida says, okay, that's legitimate. I could understand that being distracting. And he did it again 400 times. The end of the Gemara is very beautiful, that a heavenly voice comes down and basically says, Rabbi Freida, I'll give her whatever you need. Do you want your own life to be extended? Do you want everybody in your generation to go to Olam Haba? Of course, Rabbi Freda, being selfless individual, says, do it for the generation. I don't need anything for myself. And God says, well, I'll give you both. I thought you were going to make that choice. Everybody in your generation will be taken care of, and you'll, of course, have a arichas yamim, which I like to say was mida keneged mida. Rabbi Freda gave so much of his life to this particular student, he deserved a little bit of time for himself. A very, very beautiful Gemara. And this is, of course, the third mode of patience, which has to deal with the substance of the instruction itself, is that, not every student is going to grasp things exactly the first time. By the way, they may retain it for much longer, the harder that they have to work for it, Azor Medima Barina Yiktsaro. But this is a vital element of what it means to have patience in the educational context as well. So just to review again, number one, having patience and not overwhelming with the entire corpus of Torah and mitzvahs at once, that's simply not a recipe for success. As the Malbim says, chanoch hanar, chanoch margilo, me'at, me'at, to take a stepwise and systematic approach, I think is absolutely important, number one. Number two is to recognize that, spiritually speaking, different people develop in different ways, at different paces, for different reasons. Rabbi Akiva testifies about himself that you had approached him at the age of 37 and shown him a Talmud Chacham, and he would have wanted to break the guy's arm or leg, right? That's, I think, a pretty telling Gemara with many implications for how we should continue to be open to people, even if it seems like, the ship has sailed in terms of their spiritual potential. And then number three is that in the course of instruction, one certainly has to be patient in the way that Rabbi Freda was, and even if we could only aspire to his unsurpassed level of patience, with his Talmidim, and this particular Talmud in specific, it is something that we can all take to heart and to aspire towards. There's just one final element as we begin to bring the Shir to its conclusion that I wanted to key in on, which is really the etymology of Chinuch, that is to say, from where the word derives, and hopefully, if we can understand the precise etymology of the word and what does it actually mean, then we can understand not just the etymology, but the teleology of chinuch, that is to say, the ultimate goal. What are we trying to do when we use the term chinuch? What sort of general sentiments are we trying to evoke? And what specific goals and applications do we have in mind? So there's a Rashi in Parshas Lech Lecha. This is right after Lot is captured. We're told that Avram makes a remarkable gesture, that he's going to challenge these four mighty kings who are in alliance with each other, and he's going to do it essentially alone with a small group of 318 men, a paramilitary force. We know that the rabbinic tradition is that it wasn't 318, it was just one other guy. I don't think it makes the miracle that much smaller or larger. Again, he was going up against four kings. The pasuk says, Vayarek es chanichav. Okay, those who were his chanichim. In modern Hebrew, chanichim literally means campers. But Rashi makes, a very, very, very significant comment here, one that I think, again, has very far-reaching implications. So Rashi says, if you look at the underlined section, chanichav is obviously from the language of chinuch. Hu lashon haschalas kinisas ha'adam okli lu'umnus shu asid lamod ba. One more time with translation. Lashon haschalas, chinuch comes from the language of beginning, Knisas ha'adam o kli, entering an individual, or it even could be a vessel, like we talk about Zos Chanukas ha'mizbeach. The mizbeach was initiated or inaugurated. So it could apply to an inanimate object, it could apply to a human being. When we use the term chinuch, haschalas knisas ha'adam o kli, le'umnus shehu asid la'amod ba. That chinuch properly defined is not just general education. We don't call it limud. We call it a chinuch. It by definition is differentiated, right? To initiate a mizbeach into its function where korbanos are going to be offered is very different than to initiate a kior, right? The water basin, the laver, into its function, which is a completely different function. So the very term chinuch itself, according to Rashi, implies differentiation. That what is this person going to ultimately do? What is going to be his or her contribution? The chinuch that we give them has to reflect that. And so it's no small wonder then, in the classical pasuk of chinuch, we have it in Sefer Mishle, it's in your next source, chanoch lanar al pi darko, to initiate, to educate, to instruct the child according to his or her path, gam ki yazkin, so that when that child comes of age, lo yasur mimenu, that child will not have to stray from the training that they were given. We all know the hardest thing in life, whether it's financially or in the sense of one's occupation, is to have to reinvent oneself in the middle of one's life. Sometimes you have no choice, you know, if war comes and you're a refugee. So you're going to have to reinvent yourself. It's a very difficult thing to do. What we want to do, educationally speaking, is to try to identify as early as possible a certain proclivity, a certain inclination or dispensation that a child has for a particular path, and to help that child along that path, gam ki yaskin, so that, you know, later on in that young man, young woman's life, lo yasur mimenu, they won't have to go and rediscover a different path. So chinuch, by its very definition, relates to the idea of initiation of an individual or a vessel along a particular path, a path which is specific to that young person. And indeed, that implies that we have a very deep appreciation for the fact that there's not one way to be a God-fearing and a learned Jew, that there are so many different ways. That Margala b'fumayu d'rabbanan d'yavna, this is the 16th source, the rabbis of Yavna used to say, this is perhaps my famous, my favorite Gemara in Shas in terms of the attitude that it reflects. Ani birya v'chaveri birya, I am a creature and my friend is a creature. Ani malachti ba'ir, I happen to be a denizen of the Beit Midrash. Torah is my, not just the avocation, but my vocation. V'hu malachto basada, and he is employed in the fields. This person is not a Torah scholar. He's an honest farmer, a God-fearing Jew. Ani mashkim l'malachti, I get up early to do my work. V'hu mashkim l'malachto, and he certainly has a work ethic as well in terms of doing his work. Kishem shu'enu mizgadim l'malachti, he doesn't encroach upon my area. He doesn't pretend to be, let's say, a halachic decisor or a posik. Kach anieni mizgadir b'mlachto, I don't have the presumptuousness or the pretense to say, you know, what we should plant in this season. I recognize that he has his own expertise. A person always has to know what he does not know. That's also very important in life. Vishema tomar, and God forbid, lest anybody say, ani marbe v'hu mamit, that somehow my contribution is more significant than his is. Shaninu, we have learned, and we have tried to internalize the message. Echad hamarbe ve'echad hamamit, whether one does, quantitatively speaking, a lot or a little, matters not. Uvilvad shechavin libo lashamayim, what truly matters is for a person to have their heart directed to heaven. That is to say, that there is not one predetermined outcome that we're looking for. The only way to be successful in terms of chinuch, which by its very definition is differentiated, it means to allow a young person to find the path that's appropriate for them within the basic framework and parameters of halacha, of Torah and mitzvos, means that we have to not just be accepting, but embracing and excited about the fact that our children and our students should not all look the same. God did not create one tipus, one mold. And one of the things that I'm so proud about with the yeshiva that I'm affiliated with is that I think we really understand this. And I think we really do everything in our power to ensure that every Talmud has a strong sense that he has a unique contribution to make, whatever his skills that God endowed him with are. And it's our job to empower him along that path, of course, to give him the basic skills in terms of Jewish knowledge and Jewish observance, to be within the framework and the parameters of halacha. There are certainnly those who will go on to be great Talmidei Chachamim and rabbinic leaders of the next generation, but there will go those who will go on to all other fields, which we have an enormous amount of respect for. We recognize the contribution that each and every individual can make to society at large. In fact, we're learning Masachas Kiddushin this year, and that's exactly what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said last 2 minutes that I have. At the end of Masachas Kiddushin, he says, Ein lecha 17th source, umna shoveres min alam. This world requires all different kinds of professions. Ashrei mi sheroeh eshora ve'umnas me'ula, oylo lemi sheroeh eshora ve'umnas peguma. It's always nice to be on the track for a noble kind of profession, but e efshar la'olam, below bosim lo borsiki. The world cannot function, this is of course meant to be an idiomatic statement, without he who makes perfumes and he who is a tanner, where let's say the olfactory experience is not exactly what he or she who makes perfumes experience, quite the opposite. It was apparently very unpleasant. I don't have any direct experience with that, I should say, thankfully. But again, the real point here is efshar le'olam b'lo bosim b'lo borsiki. The world requires everything. And if you think about it, You know, we all rely not just on having good doctors and lawyers and good accountants, but all kinds of professions. People who work with their hands, you know, people who work in government and people who work in law enforcement. Society needs to function, and we need to be able to produce individuals who are endowed with certain natural strengths and are able to really able to enhance society overall, something that we all rely on and take for granted. And thus, by definition, our role as educators, as parents, as grandparents, is not to direct a child into a mold that doesn't really fit, but to understand that each and every child has his or her own proclivity. And God endowed that child with certain very fundamental characteristics that are best expressed through a particular vocational path, whatever that vocational path is, and not just the ones that are the most common, but we have, I think, a sacred obligation and duty to try to relate to the child on a differentiated basis. After all, that's exactly the way Rashi understood the term chinuch. It means to take a clear in Adam and to initiate them into the path that will become theirs. And apropos the parsha we read yesterday, and we'll certainly think about this in the weeks ahead as we continue with Yaakov's own experience. Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, the great leader of German Jewry in the 19th century in Frankfurt, you know, made a very trenchant observation. The pasuk says about Yaakov and Esav, "Vayigdalu in ha'ne'arim, vayihi Esav ish de'atzai ish sadev Yaakov ish tam yoshev alim," that they grew up, and then from that point on, they differentiated. One of them went out to the field, the other one went to the Yoshevo Halim. Rashi makes a comment on that particular pasuk. He says, you know, until that point, you couldn't tell the difference between them. And Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, we're not going to read it inside in the interest of time, but he says, you know, it's really wrong. It's really wrong. It means that Yitzchak and Rivka made a very profound educational error. Again, I don't know that I would have the temerity to say it, but Shimshon Raphael Hirsch did. He says, but they didn't notice that when Yaakov and Esav were 6, 7, 8 years old, that they already were showing different strengths. They had them in the same exact yeshiva until they were bar mitzvah. So that's a crime. It's a crime against one of them, right? Yaakov belongs in a very enriched academic environment, and Esav belonged in a place where his natural strengths is an ish yodei tzayid, ish tzadeh, somebody who was very capable in his own sphere, in his own area. I mean, he deserved an educational experience that would amplify those particular talents and give him the framework that he needed to succeed. Basic idea. And Yitzhak and Rivka, you know, just because they're twins doesn't mean they have to be in the same class, in the same school, in the same environment. And so we certainly have a responsibility to follow the guidelines of Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, noting that Esav didn't have to turn out, unfortunately, the way that Esav turned out. And part of the product is maybe he felt the whole time, this is what Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says, that he doesn't have a chelek, that there's no place for him within a very narrow and constrained environment. He's never really going to be able to excel. And nobody wants to feel their whole life that they're just mediocre. Everybody can excel in a certain area if we have the bravery and courage to say what, you know, and the insight and wisdom to say that's important. Remember the Gemara in Kiddushin, Eif Shal Olam Belo Bosen Belo Borsiki. The world can't function without people in every different kind of profession. So let's at least do our children and our students the service of being able to enable them to walk along that path. And indeed, the very first time we have chinuch in the Torah, and the Vilna Gaon always reminds us that the first time a word appears in the Torah is really the critical and dispositive time. There was an individual named Chanoch who was the seventh generation between Adam and Noach. The pasuk says, "Vayishaleh Chanoch Esto Elokim," that Chanoch walked with God. And of course, unfortunately, Chanoch passed away a little bit earlier than those who came before him or after him. So I'm certainly not focusing on that part of the pasuk, "Veinenu ki lakachos olokim." But that first part of the pasuk, the first time that we meet the word chinuch in all of the chumash, it says, "Vayishaleh Chanoch Esto Elokim," that chinuch gives a person the capacity to walk with God, to feel God's presence in his or her life, to feel that he or she doesn't have to fit into a mold that's really unnatural to them, but allows them to serve God, and then within the parameters, the Dalet Amos of Halacha, within the parameters of Torah and Mitzvot, but in a way that really honors the unique personality that every young man or young woman brings to bear. And so indeed, just to summarize and distill what it was that we saw today, especially apropos Hanukkah, which is the holiday that focuses on chinuch and the idea of the preservation of the Masorah, is that chinuch is something that really requires a sense not just of a technical transmission of the details of mitzvos, but there's a certain art to it. Remember with Avram and Yishmael, vayimaher la-so-so-so. He didn't just do hachnas azorchem because his father did it. He did it in the way that his father did it. And his father didn't have to give him specific instructions. He watched and that was enough. And remember, those nonverbal lessons can often be the most important. Exactly as the Rav said about his mother, that her lessons were transmitted for the most part in silence, but watching her, imbibing by osmosis, the sense that she had of God's presence in her life was something that he carried with him for the rest of his life. His words, not mine. If it wasn't for her, I would have grown up a soulless, dry being without a sense of what religious experience is all about, and that's something that's critical. We mentioned the importance of patience. Patience in three senses of the term. Number one, not to overwhelm with everything at once, but kinesher ya'ir kilo, margilo ma'at ma'at, in the language of the Malbim, that stepwise, slowly but surely, we introduce our children. We cannot overwhelm. Number two, the idea that we have to have patience for when a person is ready. Rabbi Kiva was ready relatively late at 40, and he says that if you had come to me before that, my response would have been very antagonistic. Anashchenu, not kikelev, but kichamor, shovera ta'etzem, I would have broken their bones. So you have to wait for a person to have their moment and to be their carpe diem, to seize that particular moment, number two. And then number three, substantively, especially with children who struggle with various challenges in terms of learning, to be as much as we can like Rabbi Freida, and to be willing to repeat and to review and to find different modalities, different ways of communicating with these children. Rabbi Freida wasn't hesitant to repeat the lesson 400 times, and if there was some interruption, he understood that the learning needs of that particular child required some extra special attention. So we have to be patient in terms of the substance of our instruction as well. And then finally, we talked about how chinuch, based on a comment of Rashi, chinuch really means to initiate and to inaugurate something towards its future task or function. It could be Chanukah HaMizbeach in the context of the holiday, of course, we'll celebrate this month, but of course it could be a person. Chanuch Lanar Al Pidarko then becomes a natural conclusion to draw. It has to be differentiated where this child is going. Reb Shamshon Raphael Hirsch understood that this is exactly the problem in terms of Esav, that he wasn't given the instruction and the education that he needed to be the best version of Esav that he could be. He wasn't going to be Yaakov and Ishtam Yoshev Olim, but he could be a very, very credible contributor to the Jewish community. He should have been a credible contributor. It's really an educational tragedy, as we recognize that what the rabbis of Yavne recognized, Echad Amarbe v'Echad Amamid, Uvilvat Shechav and Libol HaShamayim, what matters is that a person's intention should be for the honor of heaven and not try to, God forbid, bend himself or herself to something that she's not or he's not. As the Gemara in Kiddushin says, Yefshar La'olam B'lo Bosim B'lo Borsiki, the world needs people in all kinds of professions, and it's our responsibility to direct young people to a profession where they can best serve God and the community overall. Vayishalech Chanoch Es Halokim, with a prayer and with the aspiration that in so doing, in empowering and affording each of our students and children and grandchildren the opportunities to find the educational path within the framework and parameters of halacha that best enables them to fulfill their God-given potential, that will lead reciprocally to a result, Vayishalech Chanoch Es Halokim, where they experience their religious life, not, God forbid, as a burden or something they merely have to toil in, but on the contrary, as a rarefied and exalting experience of sensing God's presence in their lives. I want to thank everybody this morning again for having me. In a broader and a deeper sense, I want to thank the beautiful Highland Park community for sending such wonderful Talmidim, who, as I said at the beginning, don't only have the Schar Halicha of all the miles that they log on the turnpike, and they certainly do have that Schar Halicha, but once they come there, I can attest to the fact that they are not only Holchin, but they are Osin. They make a great contribution to our overall environment, and it's really with that spirit of Hakaras HaTov that I'm so proud to be here this morning to show that we can drive sometimes south on the turnpike instead of forcing you guys to come north. Really, with that sense of debt of gratitude, I'm so grateful to be in your wonderful community. Wish everybody a Chodesh Tov. And again, thank you so very much.